You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. This is my Friday wrap-up show, where I review stories that were in the news this week, as well as news stories that will be in the news next week. But I'm really going to just focus on one story, and that's the budget deal. I haven't had the opportunity yet to edit the last show, so it hasn't been posted. But the last show, I pointed out towards the end that as I was speaking, the House was probably going to be holding a vote on the so-called budget deal that the House agreed with the Senate. Namely, and remember, the Senate is controlled by the Democratic Party, and they passed it in the House. And the vote was 332 yays, or for it, and 94 noes. What was a little bit surprising, as well as very much disappointing, 169 Republicans voted for it, and 62 Republicans voted against it. If I were in the House, I would have definitely voted against it. But I'm not a Republican nor a Democrat. And in terms of the Democrats in the House, 163 voted for it, and 32 were opposed to it. Now, what you need to understand, which I don't think some congressmen really don't understand, and I'm not speaking for anybody but myself, but I really do have a good feel as to the views of conservatives as well as libertarians in the Tea Party movement, because I'm part of that, and I've been a conservative for decades. Is any conservative worth his salt would have voted no. Now, I know we have a lot of leaders in the Republican Party that like to claim they're conservatives, but I need to point out to them that when they control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, they were big spenders. And that's why the Republican Party, as well as the Democratic Party, have been losing people left and right year after year after year. Both parties are shrinking in size. The largest and fastest political affiliation today is independent, and there's a reason for it. You have people in both parties, and I would say more in the Republican than the Democratic Party, that have said enough is enough. I became a conservative as well as a libertarian in the 60s. I was a Goldwater supporter. Not really active, but if I voted, I would vote for the conservative candidate of either party, Democrat or Republican. Usually it was the Republican Party. And that movement grew and grew and fought the Republican Party, fought the establishment in the Republican Party that was largely what we today call progressives, or when I was in those years, they were still calling themselves liberals. The term used to describe those Republicans in the Goldwater years, where there were Rockefeller Republicans or country club Republicans. They're still around. Some of them are Republicans in name only, such as John McCain, but you have them in the House and you have them in the Senate. That's why I say why the Democratic Party is a lost cause, in the sense they are now, for all practical purposes, a progressive party, and for those that don't understand that term, they're for big government. They're for more and more spending, more and more taxes, more and more regulations, more and more debt, and also the third way you can pay for it is print money, and they're doing that as well. So the progressive party, as far as my own political philosophy, being classical liberalism, not to be confused with American liberalism. That's not a choice anymore. I can't name, and I don't think there are any. There might be one somewhere, any libertarian or, for that matter, conservative Democrats anymore. Most have either retired or switched parties to the Republican Party. But what's happening and continues to happen, and this will just give another reason for it to happen, is the Republican base is shrinking or not showing up. Even though they detest and despise and would never vote for a progressive Democrat, they likewise are not going to vote for a Republican that's a wolf in sheep's clothing. They talk conservative, but act progressive. Now, the term I use to describe both Democrats and Republicans is BIGS. They're big interventionist government status. And as far as I'm concerned, the establishment, Republican leadership establishment, are BIGS. They don't want to shrink the federal government at all. And we saw that in this vote. Just two years ago, we had an agreement on a sequester of funds that would cut spending, both mandatory and discretionary. It wasn't enough, and it was somewhat crude. It's not the way I would go about it, but it at least cut spending. What this so-called House budget deal does is increase spending. Now, there's an overriding point to understand. The existing Congress, both in the House and Senate, can't bind future Congresses. Now, what does that mean? They can say they're going to, in the out years, 8 years from now, 10 years from now, 10 is the time frame they use. They have a 10-year, in terms of budget baselines, they're always 10 years out. They can say in the distant future, and it usually is the distant future, they're going to be cutting spending. See, that was the $23 billion number. Oh, we're going to cut the deficit by $23 billion, which is less than a day's deficit. And what I mean by that, if you just look at, go to the monthly Treasury statement that's put out by the Department of Treasury. I don't have it up, but for the first 2 months, in round numbers, it was $235 billion. That's the deficit. In other words, the government has spent $235 billion more than it collected in taxes. So if you divide by 60, it's just under $4 billion a day that we're adding to the deficit. $4 billion. And I think we're headed back to a higher deficit. The deficit last year was $680 billion for the entire fiscal year, which, as far as I'm concerned, is atrocious, is totally fiscally irresponsible. But it was actually better than the prior years. 2009, it was $1.4 trillion. That was the deficit. That's $1,400 billion deficit. Now, that's not total spending. That's the spending in excess of all tax collections. The following year, for 2010, it was $1.3 trillion. I'm rounding here. You can get the numbers. Just go to the monthly Treasury statements, and they'll show you monthly the total revenues or taxes that they got, and then the total spending, and in the far right column, you'll get the deficits. And it's monthly and yearly. You can also go to the White House, the Office of Management Budget, and they have historical tables that will show you this. I'm not pulling these numbers out of the air. I'm trying to not confuse you with the numbers. I want you to get the sense of the trend. $1.4 trillion in 2009. $1.3 trillion in 2010. And then in 2011, slightly under, just under $1.3 trillion. And 12, slightly under $1.1 trillion. And then last year, fiscal year 2013, we're actually under a trillion for the first time. 680. Why? Because the sequester kicked in. The best thing that happened was that sequester. And what does this do? What does this budget deal do? It increases government spending $45 billion in 2014 and approximately $20 billion in fiscal year 2015. The better deal was what they had, which was put into law in 2011. And now what they're doing is partially rescinding it. They're nibbling at it. And Boehner, House Speaker Boehner, has the audacity to say if you're for deficit reduction, you're for this bill. Stop blowing smoke in my face, Mr. Boehner. Stop lying and misleading the American people. Because you're losing your base. You're not a leader. You're a big interventionist government statist. You want to grow the government. You're a phony and a hypocrite. And your baseline budgeting with 10-year projections is nonsense. Like I tell my audience every chance I get, the only thing to pay attention to is the current fiscal year. And what did they just do? They increased spending $45 billion. I didn't say they can't even get the sign right. What their base has been screaming for, what the Tea Party has been screaming for, what the conservative movement has been, not screaming, demanding, is a balanced budget, which means cuts in spending, not increases, cuts. Instead, they increase it $45 billion. Now, to put in context, I don't know what the final budget is going to be for 2014, but government spending will be approaching, it'll be somewhere between $3.5 trillion and $4 trillion. I don't know what the number will be. Probably closer to 3.5. My point being, this is not a huge increase in spending, but it is an increase. In other words, the better deal, the smart deal, was to leave the sequester in place, the entire sequester. Because that's the only reason fiscal year 2013 actually had a smaller deficit of only $680 billion. Remember, $1 billion is $1,000 million. We're talking a lot of money, folks. And the Republican Party, at least at one time, stood for fiscal responsibility. That's a joke. That's one of the principal reasons people are leaving the Republican Party in droves. They've been lied to. And the Republican Party better learn the lesson of that. Because you're seeing the reaction of the public, both Republicans, Democrats, and independents, of Barack Obama's big lie. They finally woke up and understood they were lied to. And he's got an award for it. The lie of the year. The President of the United States gets an award for the big lie of the year. That's why his popularity is plummeting, as is the Democratic Party. And what you need to understand, the Democratic Party, including Obama, is panicking. They're not quite in free fall, but guess what? You haven't seen anything yet. Because what's happening next year, as I speak, will be starting in January, February, every month. You'll see about 12 to 14 million people that are under their group plans where they work are going to find out that now their plan is more expensive. They have higher deductibles. Why? Because they have to have a qualified Obama plan, which includes many things that businesses don't want and can't afford. Insurance is going to go up. We've just seen a little bit. Let me put in context. You have about 156 million people, and I question that number because I think it's higher. But I believe that's the Congressional Budget Office number, that are covered under group or employer. Those are employer-based plans. In other words, wherever you work, if you have health insurance, you're covered under a group health insurance plan. Some of the very large corporations are self-insured. And if they have an insurance company involved, that's for administration of the plan. And those won't kick in until the following year. But the majority of the plans out there, in terms of number of plans and number of employees, are a small group, namely less than 50. And every one of those small group plans are either getting, have already gotten letters or will every month notifying that their plan's been terminated, and they'll, whoever their insurer is with, either will offer them a so-called qualified, approved Obamacare or Affordable Care Act compliant plan, and it's going to cost them more money. And what many employers, I don't think at least 10% or more, are some of them are going to just flat out cancel it and say, you're on your own, go to the exchanges by your own, because we can't afford it anymore. That will be one response to it. The more typical response, and I would say 80 to 90%, they're going to do a couple of things. Many now full-time employees will be finding out that they're now part-time employees working less than 30 hours. And the reason the employer does that, he doesn't have to pay health insurance for them. So what happens for those unfortunate individuals that until now were full-time employees, their hours get cut and they lose their health insurance. How's that for a Christmas present? Do you like Obamacare? Do you really like Obamacare? See, what's going to happen, the numbers have been fairly consistent. About somewhere between 55 and 60%, depends on the poll when it was taken. But on the low side, about 55% don't want Obamacare. And that's the majority. That's the vast majority of the American people. What's going to happen next year, that number is going to rise. In my prediction, it'll probably top out about 2 out of 3 voters want Obamacare repealed. So it'll go from the 55 to 60% range that the polls have been bouncing around to somewhere between 60 and 70%. And then if you look at all of them, it'll probably hit about 66%, 2 out of 3. And let's be fair. There are people that love Obamacare. And I would say that base is probably somewhere between 30 and 35%. That will be shrinking because many Democrats don't like Obamacare either. They're kind of waking up to this. You see, if you're poor, you don't have a job, if you're not making any money, you know, you're part-time, the Democrats have a plan for you. It's called Medicaid. Don't have to pay anything. Isn't that a good deal? You don't have to pay anything. You've heard of a free lunch? Well, it's free health insurance. You don't have to pay a dime. And you might say, well, how do I get that? Simple. Be poor. If you don't make any money, you qualify. And they have up to 100, and they've increased it to 138% of the poverty line. So if you make less than 138% of the poverty line, you qualify for Medicaid. And the estimate is an additional, not only the people that currently qualify, but probably an additional 15 million people, because they changed the requirements, now qualify for Medicaid. But here's the problem. A lot of states, including Texas, I believe it's 25 states, said, no, we're not going to expand Medicaid. We can't afford it. We simply can't afford it, because one of the biggest items, like it's usually either number one or two for every state budget, is Medicaid. So the states, even though the federal government for the first 2 to 3 years is dangling some money, the states say in the long run, we can't afford this at all, so we're not going to expand Medicaid. So you're out of luck. Well, you're not totally out of luck. You still have Medicaid if you're at 100% or less of the poverty line. So if you're making no money or little money, or you're working part-time and that doesn't add up to much, yeah, you got Medicaid. Aren't you lucky? No, you're not. What's the catch? When I was in sales, you know, occasionally someone said, well, what's the catch? This is too good to be true. What's the catch? Oh, there's a catch. Go try to find a specialist or a highly competent doctor that will treat you. Remember, doctors are like everybody else. They only have they work so many hours a day, so many hours a week, so many hours a year. And it's typically somewhere but on a yearly basis, on the low end, 2,000 hours to 3,000 hours, somewhere in there. Some workaholics might even get as high as 4,000. But they decide how many hours they're going to work. And then they decide, who am I going to see? And many doctors say, I'm not going to see Medicaid patients because I have people that will pay me cash and people that have good insurance that I can book appointments and they can come in and pay for my time. The trouble with Medicaid is the reimbursement rates doesn't cover the doctor's expenses of operating a medical practice. So he either totally excludes Medicaid patients or limits the number to a few. So you end up either not being able to see a specialist or seeing doctors that there are doctors that have practices that specialize in Medicaid patients, but they're not the best doctors. They're not. Many of them are from foreign nations. See, the best doctors don't need Medicaid patients. Many of them don't even need Medicare patients, and that's what's getting scary. More and more doctors are saying, I'm not even going to accept Medicare. Some are going cash on the barrel. Some you just pay a flat fee and you can call for an appointment. Some will actually come to your home. They don't want anything to do with Obamacare. They don't want they don't like the paperwork. They don't like to be under the gun of the federal government. They don't even like the insurance companies. But that's their reaction. Now, I've gotten a little off the track. I didn't mean to talk about Obamacare. But there are going to be employment impacts. And it's starting already, and it'll get worse, worse, and worse. And my point being, Obamacare was sold with a big lie, repeated many, many times. Over three dozen times, the president lied to the American people. Now, why did he do that? That you might say in retrospect, you know, that's not very smart. Now, I beg to differ. Who's president of the United States today? Barack Obama. He got reelected. And why did he get reelected? Because people heard, if you have a medical plan, you can keep your medical plan. If you have a doctor, you can keep your doctor. And if you're a typical family of four, it'll reduce your costs by $2,500. That's what many people heard and remember. And now they're finding they can't keep their plan, they can't keep the doctor, and the premiums are significantly higher, 50, 100% or more. And they can't keep the doctors because the doctors aren't in the networks of whatever plan they sign up for. And the premiums are much higher. So on all three counts, the president lied. He has lost the trust and the confidence of the American people. And the penalty for that, we'll see in the 2014 elections and in the 2015 elections. There is a moral lesson that both parties will learn. If you lie or seriously mislead the American people, they will eventually notice that and make sure you pay the price come the next election. You see, there are many Republicans that are in Congress, both in the House and the Senate. Many of them were incumbents. Many of them got elected for the first time. Who put them in office? I'll tell you who put them in office. Tea Party movement members as well as conservatives put them in office. And I look at this vote, and I will tell you something. I'll support the 62 Republicans that voted against this budget deal, but I'm not going to support any Republican that voted for it. And there are 169 of them. And that includes Paul Ryan. I'm sick and tired of being lied to, shuck and jived to, by Paul Ryan, Boehner, and the leadership of the Republican Party. It's a bad deal. Now, I know what they're going to say. Well, by doing this, there can't be a shutdown. You're missing the point, and it's a very important point. And you see, a lot of people in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans, don't understand this. They truly do not understand this. And that's why I've been saying, we got a big problem. Spending is out of control. The debt is out of control. Unfunded liabilities are out of control. They don't believe that. They think they can continue getting away with what they've been getting away with for decades. That's why they don't believe they have a problem. We've been doing this on a much smaller scale for over 80 years, going on 90 years. I'm trying to figure. Let me see. 80? Yeah, 80 going on 90. Depends when you want to start. I would say 1930 is a good place to start on this. But what has happened gradually, the government has run bigger and bigger deficits. Remember, the last budgetary deficit of George Bush in fiscal year 2008 was $459 billion. Now, at that time, because he was a Republican president, the media, that's predominantly like 95% plus liberal or progressive, were crucifying him. This is terrible. Now, the president, they make requests. But who controlled the House and the Senate then? The Democratic Party. And they were saying, look at this huge deficit. Yet, for 5 years, we've had deficits, four of them being over $1 trillion, the last year being $680 billion, that are much higher than in the last fiscal year of 2008. See, the key thing is who controls the House and Senate? And what happened in 2006? The Democratic Party won the House and the Senate. And partly because many Republicans said enough is enough with these Republicans. They're not balancing the budget. They're going on this spending spree and intervening abroad, and we're sick of it. And we stayed home. A few even probably voted for the Democratic candidates. And what happened is the Democratic Party swept into the House and the Senate, and then they went on a spending binge. And when Barack Obama was elected, they passed a stimulus package of over $800 billion, in addition to supplemental budget appropriations for fiscal year 2009. They really cut loose. There's a reason why the national debt today is over $17 trillion and quickly will be $18 trillion, probably by the end of this fiscal year at the rate they're spending. Now, what happened? The American people woke up. They saw what the Democratic Party did, and they corrected that mistake in 2010, partially corrected it, by putting Republicans in control of the House. Believe me, it wasn't the Republican Party that got control of the House. It was the American people waking up and being really mad, outraged. And that's called the Tea Party movement. It's also called the conservative movement. And it's also called independence and says, hey, only got two choices. The Democratic Party, they've gone insane. They're big spending, and then all they want to do is spend, 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 tax, 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 go in debt, and then print money. I'm not voting for those guys. The road, that's the road to serfdom. That's the road to being a dependent of the government. And that's the road to having to work 5-6 months a year to pay taxes to the government. They said enough of that And that's why the House today is controlled by the Republican Party. Now, they might be making, and I'm sure some of them are, that are Republican incumbents in the House today. Well, where do they have to go? They can't go to the Democratic Party. And that's true. But the Tea Party movement, as well as conservatives, are going to throw these turncoat Republicans out of office, these traitors. A core principle of being a Republican, as well as a conservative and libertarian, is fiscal responsibility, living within the means of the American people. That is a core principle. And that is the number one demand of the Tea Party movement. Cut spending and balance the budget. Cut spending and balance the budget. And what did the House just do? They increased spending where they already had locked in place. And I'm not a big fan of the sequester, but at least it cut spending and is better than this deal. And I think this deal is trivial. Trivial in the sense of the dollar amounts. But it's the principle involved that apparently the Republican leadership doesn't believe in. I've never had any doubts that they were big spenders. You see, ladies and gentlemen, you're being lied to by both the Democrats and the Republicans. Not hard to understand. You got to wake up, because they're picking your pockets. If you let them, they'll pick your pockets. And the Democrat way to pick your pocket is they play Santa Claus. It's we versus the rich. No, it's not. What they're doing is saying, we'll give you this goodie. It could be food stamps, supplemental income or welfare, subsidized housing. So you have a group of people, I call them the moochers. They're the people that don't work, or if they do work, it's not enough to support a family. So they are dependent upon the federal government. They're the people that are going to be getting what they think is, oh, I'm going to get coverage. No, they're not. What they're going to get is welfare in the form of Medicaid. And good luck with that. You can have a nice card, but when you get seriously sick, go find a good doctor and a specialist that'll treat you. You're going to have to go hat in hand and maybe get an appointment with a doctor that'll treat you. And you're not going to get the best of care. And the death rates in hospitals for people on Medicare are much higher. There's no such thing as a free lunch, and there's no such thing as free health care. The world doesn't work that way. But that is the way the Democratic Party, for the last 80 years, actually longer than that, but that's their playbook. They want to be Santa Claus, socialist Santa Clauses, but Santa Claus. They want to give you stuff. Now, what's the price? You got to vote for them. If you don't vote for us, we can't give you stuff. You see, this is not hard to understand. And that's why the blacks in this country, over 95% voted for Obama. He's going to give me stuff. He's going to give me food stamps. He's going to give me welfare. He's going to give me an iPhone. He's going to give me free health insurance. What's the unemployment rate today amongst teenagers? It's over 20%. And in black teenagers, it's somewhere between 40 and 50%. Hasn't worked out very well for the blacks. Eventually, I even think the blacks will wake up to this. I really do. Some of them are already awake. You see, they bought the shuck and jive of Obama, the identity politics, the hope and change. He's the Messiah. He's going to save us. He's going to redistribute the wealth, and we're going to get some goodies if we vote for him. Well, this moocher dependent mentality hasn't worked out for him very well. You see, I think the solution is a good paying job, a good paying full-time job, not part-time, a good paying full-time job where you have good benefits. That's the goal. How do you get there? Do you get there by expanding the size of the federal government? Are you out of your mind? Case in point, look at the European countries. In preparing this show, I was listening to Dan Mitchell. He's at the Cato Institute. He's an economist there, specializes in taxes. And I think this video is about 2 years old, so the numbers might be a little off. But the problem Europe has, most of Europe, not all of Europe, is their government spending in total, this is all government spending, is over 50%. Over 50%. And what's happened is the people have the attitude is the government has to provide for them. They are truly dependent on the government. They've lost really a strong work ethic. They have their handouts. Give me more, give me more, give me more. And that's how the so-called social democrats or socialists, the collectivists, that's their playbook too, just like the Democratic Party. They've been playing Santa Claus. The problem is the debts have been getting bigger, bigger, and bigger, and they have to be serviced with interest, and the taxes have gotten higher, higher, and higher. We're talking tax rates, when you add them all up, of over 50%. Listen, if half of your gross national product goes to government, where do you think that comes from? It comes from the people in those countries. Now, before you celebrate, today in the United States, if you add up all the government dollars we spend locally, you know, city, state, city, county, state, you got to also add, you know, for schooling. The United States is about, and this is approximate, 40%. The federal government is right around half of that. It's at 21%. I can remember when it was just above 30%. It has grown and grown and grown and grown. And in a few years, thanks to both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, we'll probably be hitting 50%. Might take another 20 years, but unless this is reversed, that's what happens. And what does that mean? That means more taxes. It means more debt and more printing of the money. You see, if you want a good-paying job, you have to have what's called capital formation. That's savings and investment. And you also need business formation. And you need a climate that encourages that, that provides you an incentive to do that. Higher and higher tax rates do not provide you an incentive. See, the problem, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm a product of this. I went through many years of training in economics, in Keynesian economics. And what you need to know about Keynes is his key policy conclusion, and he wanted to increase the size of the government, was when you had a recession or depression, the answer was more government spending, to take up the slack in the cuts in investment and consumption. That, in a nutshell, is what his book, The General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money, is. Now, what you need to understand, to at least be fair to Keynes, that's if you're in a recession or a depression where the economy is not growing. Technically, we are not in a recession today. The economy is growing. It has been growing since July of 2009. The problem is it has been growing at a lower rate than that is necessary to get people back to work. We're about at two-thirds speed. We're growing about 2%. Historically, the United States post-war was about 3%. We're below what's called the trend line. And the reason I emphasize the focus, like a laser beam, needs to be on in getting the growth rate up. Because if you can get the growth rate up, what happens? You have more jobs, more incomes, and yes, you get more taxes and less deficits. But how do you accomplish that? You want an environment that encourages capital formation, which means businesses invest in buildings, plant and equipment, vehicles, new facilities, new offices, new retail stores, And you also want business formations where you have entrepreneurs, businessmen, taking a risk and starting a new business and employing people. And it's a, and if they're successful, more people and more stores. And you get more capital formation. That's what you want. That's the solution to what's ailing the United States today. And remember, we're growing. We need less government spending. Less government spending. And what did the Congress, the House, just do? They voted for more government spending. We're not near a balanced budget, folks. Last year, the deficit was $680 billion. Just the first 2 months, it's $235 billion. I don't know what the deficit is in total going to be next year. It'll be somewhere between, I think, $700 billion and $1 trillion. In other words, for 6 years, we run these massive deficits. Now, why is that a problem? Where does the money come from? It comes from you and me in taxes. In other words, you have the moochers and then you have the producers, the people that are actually working and producing goods and services. And fortunately, at least up to now, you still have the strong work ethic in the United States. And I would say about two-thirds to 70% of the people believe that. The other 30% or a third are, they're moochers. They're the ones on food stamps. Now remember, half the people on food stamps are children. I'm not blaming the children for the problems of the parents. You see, the economic policies of Barack Obama and the Democratic Party have led to economic stagnation. Yes, the economy is growing at roughly a 2% rate, two-thirds of what it should be just to meet the historical standard. But the problem is when you have persistently high unemployment rates of above 7% for every day, week, month, year that Obama has been in office, that's failed economic policies. The American people were told if you pass this stimulus package and if you pass Obamacare, we're going to be about at 5% unemployment. We're not at 5% unemployment. We're at 7%. And much of the decline of the unemployment numbers has been due to the fact that people have been leaving the labor force because they can't find jobs. And I'll say this again. There are upwards of 30 million people today that are looking for a full-time job. Some are unemployed, can't find it. Others are working part-time. And I was preparing this show, and I overheard a conversation. I'm on a community college campus, Richland College, but this is happening across the country. And this is not the first time I've heard it. As a matter of fact, I've written stories about it that appeared in the Richland Chronicle paper several months ago. The Dallas County Community College District is making it real strict that adjunct instructors, professors cannot work more than 19 and a half hours, period. Now why? They don't have to pay health insurance or retirement benefits. You see, that's the dirty little secret about higher education, folks. Most schools and universities today, especially community colleges, but also universities, if they didn't have part-time faculty teaching the courses, as well as people working in other jobs, staff, they'd have to shut down the universities in, all across America, with very few exceptions. That's the dirty little secret. And they get away with it only because a large percentage, I'd say at least half, I don't know what the exact number is, you have people that have other jobs, full-time jobs, or some part-time jobs, and like to teach. So I'm not blaming the universities for doing it. They're just trying to save money. just like the businesses that are cutting people back to less than 30 hours. In many cases, less than 20 hours. You see, one of the consequences of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, or if you want the full name, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, that really doesn't protect patients, and it's certainly not affordable, and good luck finding care, especially if you have Medicaid. It's a joke, folks. It's a disaster. Not only in its own terms, but its employment impacts. And all that's going to require more spending. You see, the game the Democrats are playing is to make you dependent on them. They don't like Obamacare. They want single payer, where the government controls everything, where they have a monopoly. It's about control and power, folks. The name of the game of the collectivists around the world, whether they're communists, socialists, social democrats, democrats, whatever the label is, they're bigs. They're four big interventionist government and their status. They're bigs. They want big government. They think the answer to our problems is more and more government. It hasn't been working. It never worked. Eventually, they understand that. Why did you think the Soviet Union collapsed? Why did you think China, communist China, and I still call them communist China, at least decided that some capitalism is needed? They saw that what they were doing and the Soviet Union were doing and the socialists were doing didn't work. The incentives weren't there. And we have some rather slow people called Democrats and progressives that really haven't got it in their head. See, they think they can get away with more taxes, more debt, and more printing of money. That is what they think is the solution. We have a deficit? No problem. Pass another tax. And what they really want is a value-added tax. Think of it as another sales tax. Not to replace the existing tax. This is an other tax. If you think you were taxed too much now, they actually, if they got really control and power, if they had a lock on the House and the Senate and the presidency, there is no doubt in my mind they would pass a value-added tax. And they would sell it. We need to continue giving you all these goodies. So we're going to have to pass a value-added tax. That's what they would do. See, my frustration is everything they're doing is making it worse, whether it's government spending, more taxes, more regulation. That's why we've had over 7% unemployment. This is one of the longest stretch of high unemployment. And about half the time, it was over 9%, not quite half. Was 9 or 10, 1 month it hit 10%. Now what you got to keep in mind, and this is important, if we go into another recession, you can forget about 7%. It'll go back into the 9 and probably over the 10% range. And it wouldn't take very much to do that, and I'm seriously believing that Obamacare, once it starts being implemented, really implemented in terms of where the majority of people are covered, namely with their employer, this year and next year, that'll put it in a recession. I view as Obamacare as a tax. It is really wealth redistribution, to simplify. That's what it's all about. And here is the sad, really sad commentary. Besides blacks, who were one of the bigger supporters of Obama? The young, the so-called millennials. They were cons. They fell for this hope and change nonsense. Who is going to really be hurt with Obamacare? It's the young. Because it was designed to force young people between 18 and 29 primarily, but also a little older than that, force them to buy expensive health insurance. To do what? To subsidize sicker and older people. That, in a nutshell, is exactly what Obamacare is all about. Now, they don't tell you that, but that is exactly what Obamacare does, or the Affordable Care Act does. You notice they no longer want to call it Obamacare. It is now the Affordable Care Act. There's a reason for that. Why? Barack Obama's poll numbers are heading south fast. It's a disaster, folks. It's only beginning. It has employment impacts on the economy. It's a big tax. And who has a big target on their back? It's the young people, the ones that supported Obama. Now, they're wising up. More and more polls are showing young people don't like Obama anymore, and they don't like Obamacare. His disapproval amongst young is also, well, his disapproval is going up. Approval has been going down. You see, when you lie to people and they wake up and they start to investigate and find out the sucker was them, the fool was them, they eventually learn the hard way from experience. That's not the best way to learn, by the way. And I don't want to say I told you so, but I saw this coming. I was real disappointed. Initially, you know, I listened to this hope and change rhetoric, and it was somewhat motivational. But then I noticed, starting about mid-September of 2008, Barack Obama started to lie and lie and lie and keep it up. And then I concluded, after doing a lot of investigating, he's a bought and paid for politician. No different from the many, many hundreds of Republicans and Democrats. He's in people's pockets that make contributions to him. He sold out his base a long time ago, before he was even running. And now even many on the left are waking up to that. Slowly but surely. And that's too bad for them. Maybe next time they'll find somebody that tells the truth and means it and is not bought and paid for and basically a corrupt person. Barack Obama lacks integrity. That's why he's lost the trust and his credibility with the American people. And I don't think that's repairable. They can have the press on their side, but even the press, the media, corporate media, is beginning to revolt. You see, what happens is, eventually the media is going to find another person to replace Obama. They're going to dump him. They're going to throw him under the bus. They haven't done it yet. We're not there. But sooner or later, it's going to happen. I don't think you can turn this around very easily. And I don't think you will turn it around. As far as I'm concerned, he's a lame duck now. Now, I keep clapping. I keep it up. You know, when people that don't share your political philosophy are making mistakes, it's time to shut up and clap. Cheer them on. Because I think this whole Obamacare and his economic policies are going to destroy, not eliminate, but destroy the Democratic Party. They're going to lose big. I will really be surprised if they don't. In the 2014 elections. That's maybe the good news. The bad news is, for many of you, you're not going to have much of a choice, because 169 Republicans in the House voted for this budget deal. 169. Now, what's very revealing, and I've said it, and these numbers really right in the ballpark. See, the problem the Tea Party has, it's a movement. It's not a party. There's no one speaker for the Tea Party. I'm not a designated speaker for them. A movement are ideas and people speaking out of their frustration with the existing political system and political parties. And the problem that the Tea Party has, it's not a party. So they have a choice. They could vote for the Democratic candidate. They're not going to do that because they know the Democratic Party is just for more spending, more taxes. And that's what they're against. Or they can vote for the Republican incumbent, but many times they look at that person's record and said, he's not really much better than a Democrat. He might talk a different game, but when push comes to shove, like yesterday, 169 of them voted for more spending. That's what they did. They voted for $45 billion more spending in 2014. And another roughly $20 billion, slightly less than $20 billion, in the following fiscal year. They didn't have to do that. They could have left the sequester in place, and if they were so concerned about a shutdown of the government, vote for a continuing resolution. They've been doing it for 3 years. Now, that's not what I'm... In other words, the sequester, 100% of the sequester, is much better than just 70%. My problem with the sequester, it doesn't go near, anywhere near what needs to be done. When you're running a $680 billion deficit, you need to be cutting spending by several hundred billion every year for 3, 4, 5 years in a row to get the budget balanced. Neither political party is proposing or doing that. All the numbers, when you really look at them in terms of so-called cuts, and most of the time they're not even cuts, but the order of magnitude is less than $100 billion. And usually it's less than $50 billion. Just like that's to the extent that they have cuts. But what they're really doing, and this is a perfect example of it, remember the Budget Control Act of 2011 was passed and put in the sequester, and now they're rescinding part of it. That's what they're doing. They're spending more money, some for about half for military or defense spending, and the rest for social programs. So the Republican conservatives, the neocons, you know, they want the defense spending, and the progressive Democrats, they want the welfare spending, so they split it down the middle. That's what this deal is about. It's increasing spending. And what's laughable about it, if you're for fiscal responsibility, you're going in the wrong direction. You're increasing spending. You got what economists would say, you got the sign wrong. The sign, what I mean by that, instead of cutting spending, you're increasing it. That's the problem with this deal. And don't buy the two BS points of Paul Ryan. Well, we're back to regular order. We now have a budget. Whoop-de-doo. And the price is more spending. That's not a good deal. You had a better deal called the sequester. And you've gotten rid of approximately 30% of it this year. And next year, they'll probably go for another 30%. Before you know it, in 3 years, the sequester's gone. And they wonder why more and more Republicans, their base, are deserting them. I see through this nonsense. There are millions of people that see through the nonsense. And I'm spreading the word. This is ridiculous, ladies and gentlemen, ridiculous. Now, I need to say one thing, and it's really wait and see. It looks like the Senate, in terms of the Republicans, are not going to go along with this House budget deal. Good for them. You see, the Senate, the Democratic Party controls the Senate, and they have 56 senators. One of them is a socialist. 44 are Republican senators. It looks like most of those 44 Republicans are not going to vote for this budget deal. Now, here's the situation. To pass the budget deal in the Senate, they need 60 votes. And the Democratic leadership has said, we can't pass this bill without at least 5 and maybe 7 Republicans supporting it. Now, guess who's going to support them? You're right, John McCain, the man who came to Washington as a conservative and now is a neocon liberal. See, a neocon is a big interventionist government status, but what makes him a little bit different, he wants to intervene abroad. There isn't a war that he doesn't vote for. That's why he's a neocon. A neocon is really a Democrat that left the Democratic Party and came over to the Republican Party. I'm not going to get into what a neocon is. That's a separate show. But I'm not at all surprised that the one Republican that looks like a definite vote for it. Now, he hasn't come out and said he would do it. He's not totally stupid. Not totally. And that's the operative word there. You see, he came as a conservative, and now he's a flaming liberal. He's a progressive. He's a big interventionist government status. That's what it is. No different than the Democratic Party, and really no different from many in the Republican leadership. Oh, I think he'll vote for it. The question is, are there going to be four or five senators? Anyone in the Senate, just like the House, that votes for this deal, as far as I'm concerned, is a traitor. I won't vote for him. I don't care who he is and what his past is. It's that simple. I'll vote for any challenger in the Senate or House, any challenger that's going up to someone in the House or the Senate that voted for this deal. I hope John Boehner gets primary. I know that's a long shot. Probably not going to happen. But I hope every Republican in the House or the Senate gets challenged that voted for this deal. They put principle second. The reason why, there are two reasons why they wanted this deal. One, it would guarantee that the government would not be shut down for 2 years. And the way they would sell that is, well, if we don't have a shutdown, then we can focus on Obamacare. But what does this budget deal do? It funds Obamacare. It increases government spending. And they're jerking around with this nonsense. You're going to reduce the deficit by $23 billion when most of that is towards the end of that 10-year period. That's a joke, folks, because this Congress can't bind future Congresses. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's less than $2 billion cut. Matter of fact, I don't think it's a cut, because you're increasing spending this year for $45 billion. So the deficit's going to go up. It has to. That's just basic math. Now, here's something that you probably haven't heard that I find thoroughly disgusting. Thoroughly disgusting. And it really needs to get a little bit more attention. One of the ways to pay for this deal, one of the ways to pay for it, was to cut the pay raises in terms of the inflation index of military retirees. You heard it right. Now, I don't know about you. Well, I'll tell you this. Over the last 40 years, prices have gone up, up, and up. I just filled my gas tank. I needed 9 gallons, 9 gallons. In round numbers, I paid $3 a gallon. So I went in, and this is a discount, went to Racetrack, gave the man $27, said I'm on pump 3, give me $27 a gas. Fine. Went to my car, pumped in 9 gallons, filled the tank. Let me tell you a little story. I was in the Air Force on active duty. I was in the Air Force before this, but I was on active duty from July of 1973 to September of 78. And I can remember we didn't have long gas lines where I was, but the gas then, and this is a long time ago, but I can remember I was paying, hang on to your seats, 35 cents a gallon. 35 cents a gallon. In other words, if I wanted to fill I have a 10-gallon tank, back then, I would pay $3.50 for a full tank of gas. Today, you're lucky. I'm in Texas. But in some parts of the country, that would get you maybe 1 gallon. You see, we've had inflation. That's the point I'm trying to make. We've had inflation in food prices, energy. Everything has gone up. You see, and that's one way the government gets to make you pay for this. You see, an important point. There are three ways that the government can pay or finance their spending. One, and this is the best way, is taxes, because you know what it is or should know. That's the first way. The second way is to go into debt. And they've been doing it. Out of every dollar of government spending today, approximately 35 cents has to be charged. It's debt. In other words, the government has to go in the debt to pay that 35 cents. That's why the national debt has been going up. Now, those are the two principal ways that the government pays its bills, through taxes. And if they run a deficit, then they have to go in the debt, issue debt. It's like you using your credit card to pay the bills. But there's a third way. And that third way is have the Federal Reserve And in some countries have the government print money. Now, the Federal Reserve does not print money. It does create money. I call it digital electronic money, and it's been doing that. And probably next week, because the Federal Reserve is having a meeting, the big issue, if you're an investor or listen to or read about what's happening in the financial world, the big question is, will the Federal Reserve, now the Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States. They're not part of the government. It's really a private institution. It's a cartel. But the Federal Reserve Board is meeting to decide whether they're going to taper. See, the key question is, will the Federal Reserve taper this month, or will they wait to sometime early next year? That's question one. Will they taper or not taper? And then the second question is, by how much? Now, what are we talking about? The Federal Reserve has been buying Treasury securities as well as mortgage-backed securities issued by Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae that are now controlled. They were taken over by the government. To make it real simple, what the Federal Reserve has been doing is financing the federal government by printing money. And that's exactly, they don't print it. They don't need to print it. They're more efficient. They sit at a keyboard and type into a database, okay, we'll credit the U.S. government with $100 billion. And in exchange, we get $100 billion of Treasury securities. And what the U.S. Treasury does to pay its bills, it takes that credit and issues a check to whoever they owe money to. They deposit that credit in a bank to pay their bills. What's happening is the Federal Reserve is creating money. A shorthand way, not a very descriptive way, but in fact, they're printing money. They don't have to print it, though. And that's somewhat of a fine point. But you'll hear, and the phrase they use is quantitative easing. We're in quantitative easing 3, and what the Fed has been doing is buying every month $85 billion of either treasury combination of treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities. So the issue is, when will they taper and how much? I don't know. My guess is, yeah, and remember, why do they need to do this? Because of the deficits. Now the deficits are going down. And they at least initially said they weren't going to, they would discontinue or gradually discontinuing the buying of these treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities. They wouldn't really be changing their policy until the unemployment rate got, the expected unemployment rate, the U3 rate, got down to 6.5%. Now, the last show I went over where the current unemployment rate is at 7%. So we're not too far away. I think we're at least a year or two away to really get down to 6.5%, because that's a very soft number in terms of that 7%. Because most of the reductions in the unemployment rate over the last several years are really people leaving the labor force. That's why the labor participation rate until last month was the lowest it's been in 39 years. Right now it's at 63%. The normal range is between 66% and 67%. See, what happens is, let's say the economy got back in track and we had a boom. People that are been basically can't find a job will come back and look for jobs. And what that means, they're in the labor force looking for a job, they're counted as unemployed, and when they get a job, they're counted as employed. So the participation would shoot right back to 66% and to 67%. See, what you really want is the unemployment rate going down, the labor participation rate going up, and to do that, you need a growth rate above 3%. You need growth rates of 4, 5, 6%. We're only at 2%, and we're only really producing about 190 to 200,000 jobs a month, non-farm payroll jobs. You need at least 300,000 jobs a month to reduce the unemployment a tenth of percent. You would really want 5 to 600,000 jobs created every month. And to do that, you need growth rates of 4 and 5%. And to do that, what do you need? You need a business environment that encourages capital formation and business formation. We don't have that. We don't have that. And there the two reasons for it, and the number one reason, even before Obamacare, are these massive government spending. Government spending is out of control. And the only way it's going to get under control is you need entitlement reform at Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and Obamacare. We shouldn't have Obamacare is just another entitlement. The last thing we should have done, the last thing Obama should have done, is focus his first term on passing this. When you were looking at 9 and 10% unemployment, any president worth his salt that knew what he was doing would focus like a laser beam on getting the unemployment rate back to under 5%. We're not even close. And that's been over, we're going on 5 years. In January 21st, just about 30 days from now, little less than 40 days from now, the president would be in office for 5 years. And when he came in the office, the unemployment rate was 7.8%, and today it's 7%. That's not good. It should be at 5 or under 5. And that means you have millions of Americans that can't find work. What is that? How does that affect the government? Like, I really care. That means they don't have the revenues. You see, if we were at near full employment, somewhere between 3 and 4%, government revenues would be over $3 trillion. It might even be as high as $3.5 trillion. And if that were the case, we wouldn't have a deficit. Now, I'm telling you this because you got to connect the dots. You got to understand what's going on. And I know I probably have lost some of you. But let's get to the bottom line where the rubber hits the road. In terms of you and me, what's the problem? No secret here. The problem is we don't have enough jobs, good paying jobs with benefits. We simply do not have enough jobs. I think everyone would agree that that is the number one problem facing the United States today. Now, how do we get more jobs? You want to provide the economic incentives or economic environment to encourage business formation and capital formation. Why? Because jobs are primarily new jobs. Net new jobs are created in the private sector, not the government sector. Not at all. All the government really does is transfer money from one person's pocket into someone else's pocket. And it's a very corrupt process, and it leads to government dependency. And that's why there's no accident that some of the richest counties in the United States are right in Washington and the surrounding area. That's where the money's at. And you have people taking their cut as money goes out of one person's pocket and goes into someone else's pocket. And the politicians, the bureaucrats, the consultants, the special interests, that's why they're in Washington. They skim off some of that money. It's about power. It's about money. And who's getting screwed? You are. Because they're making the government spending is out of control. Until that is brought down, you're not going to be in an environment that encourages the formation of business or the expansion of business and capital formation. That means lower taxes. And that means, but lower taxes is only part of the solution. The central problem is the size and the scope of the federal government. The size and the scope of the federal government is the reason government spending is out of control. That is the reason why we have had these massive deficits year after year after year. First 4 years of Obama being in office, they were over $1 trillion. And there's been some improvement to $680 billion. But if you look at just the first 2 months, we're headed back up to $1 trillion again. In the first 2 months alone, we're at $235 billion. Now, you can't multiply by six. That's not what I'm suggesting. Because it's very hard to predict what the tax revenues are for the simple reason that depends on the economy and how well the economy is doing. If the economy is doing very well and growing, let's say the economy were growing at 4 or 5%, revenues would come in and the deficit would go down. But the problem, ladies and gentlemen, the economy is not growing at 4 or 5%. It is barely growing at 2% if you average it over a year or two. And if we go into another recession, which is two quarters of negative growth, what do you think happens? Just like happened in 2008 and 2009, revenues sink and the deficit balloons. The answer to our problems, the number one problem being jobs, is twofold, actually threefold. One, you have to cut government spending, both mandatory and discretionary. And mandatory includes entitlement programs as well as welfare programs. And discretionary includes defense spending. What did we do yesterday, or what did the House try to do? And they succeeded. They had 332 votes. Remember, you have 435 members. So that's a lot of votes. A lot of bipartisan here. You know, this is a very telling vote. Because I think this proves that what you have in both parties, they're both big interventionist government status. They have no intention of reducing the size and the scope of the federal. The Democratic Party obviously doesn't. They want to expand it. They want to be like Europe, where the size and the scope of government, both federal, state, county, city, school district, is over 50%. Their answer to the world's problems, society's problems, is more and more government. And that requires more and higher tax rates to get more tax revenue. It requires more debt, and it requires the printing or the creation of money. That's what the Democratic Party is about. But the Republican Party is really almost about the same thing. They just have a different story, and they want to spend it on, instead of as much welfare and entitlements, they want to spend a little bit more on defense. See, I'm a big advocate of a strong defense, but I'm not a big advocate of government intervention in the world. I don't believe in this nation-building nonsense. And we're going to arrogantly go in and create democracies and republics. No, it hasn't worked out very well. They're still killing each other in Iraq. They're still killing each other in Afghanistan. They're still killing each other in Libya and Syria. Hasn't worked out very well. And I don't want American sons and daughters being in the middle of that. They've been killing each other for centuries. It's not going to stop. And I think it's the arrogance and the stupidity and lack of wisdom of the leaderships on both the Democratic and the Republican Party that gets us involved in this nonsense. George Washington and the founders were right. Stay out of it. Instead, we have John McCain. I call him the warmonger, always beating the drum. Whoa, we got to support the rebels in Syria, even though a good number of them are religious fanatics. They're al-Qaeda. The most effective ones are al-Qaeda. You want to support them? Are you out of your mind, McCain? It's not our fight. Stop the nonsense. You see, what it's really about, well, you know, I get big campaign contributions from various defense contractors. And guess what? Defense contractors, they love wars because guess what? That's good for business. That means more orders. You know, wars require supplies and munitions and fighter aircraft and ships. I'm all for war because I need to pay back the people that are paying my campaign contributions. That is a somewhat simplified explanation, but not far off from the mark. Eisenhower, General Eisenhower, warned us about this. And remember, half of that $45 billion that they want to spend next year, the increase, goes to the Defense Department. Guess who's scratching whose back? So I'm done with Boehner. I frankly am done with the leadership of the... I'm no longer Republican, but I have no illusions, not that I had many left, of the leadership of the Republican Party. They are really not much better than the Democratic Party. Whereas George Wallace, a Democrat, that I seldom quote, but he had one good quote. There's not a dime's worth of difference between either party. And he's absolutely right. And if you don't believe me, look at the numbers. And I need to say this. The way you listen to my show is go to prankpops.wordpress.com. That's prankpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, there are links to this podcast. And below it, you'll have information. I'm rather selective on this. And at the very top, I have a photo image of what the vote was and some of the details of the so-called deal. It's a bad deal. They're trying to sell this piece of garbage. I almost said a bad word. You see, if they were really serious, I know they don't have the votes in the Senate, and they obviously don't control the White House. It's going to take the House and the Senate and the presidency being controlled by the Republican Party. But my worst fear, and I think it will come true, let's say that happens. They're not going to cut spending. As much as they like to talk the talk of a conservative and we're for a balanced budget, remember, to get a balanced budget amendment, not a balanced budget, just an amendment, requires a two-thirds vote. They're not going to get that. And then it has to go to the states to be passed. That's nice, but that's, I think, fantasy land. It's not going to happen in my lifetime. So what you need to have is a balanced budget. Forget about the amendment. That's just window dressing. That's smoke in your face. Oh, I'm for the balanced budget amendment. I'm for balanced budgets. In 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, when I'm retired, I'm for balanced budget. But between you and me, it's not going to happen. And it's not going to happen. Not with this House. What do you need to do? You need to replace your congressmen, Democrats and Republicans. Anyone that voted for this deal, you should vote against, whether in the House or the Senate, period. And there's probably some good people that need to be thrown out. But you need to send a message. And really, the only thing these people really understand is when they're kicked out of office. And that requires you to first find a candidate that can beat them in every congressional district. Because the problem what happens is some very good intentions, well-meaning people, part of the Tea Party movement, go to Washington, and it's only a matter of time that you'll see some of those 169 votes that were here. They get co-opted. Oh, you want a good committee assignment? Well, you got to play ball. You got to play ball with us, and you got to vote with us. That's what's going on. That's why I'm through with the Democrat and the Republican Party. A plague on both houses. What the Tea Party really needs is to become a party. And I think a good name of it would be the Independence Party. I've had other names, but I'm sort of now like the idea, keep it simple, the Independence Party. For people that are producers and workers, not moochers and takers. And the problem is we have people that are really takers. They're professional career politicians, and the only thing they're concerned about is staying in power and being reelected. So the only way to send a message is to vote them out of office. And that requires you, me, and everyone across this country to find Tea Party conservatives, libertarians, independents, and find somebody that is principled and hold their feet to the fire. And if they become a turncoat traitor that these Republicans have become, then vote them out of office. And it's not going to happen in one election. This is a 20, 30, 40-year process. But it has to start somewhere, because these policies will result in your children, grandchildren being burdened by huge debts, huge unfunded liabilities, and find difficulties even starting their own careers. So if you care about your loved ones, your children, your grandchildren, you got to pay attention. You have to pay attention. You have to dig this information out. I'm trying to give you some guides and some pointers, because I understand the economics. I think I understand some of the politics. But that's what's going on, because they're not going to change. Do you think John Boehner's going to change? Do you think Paul Ryan is going to change? They're very good talkers in terms of talking a conservative or libertarian or even an Ayn Rand line. But the proof's in the pudding, the proof's in the votes, the actions. And they know this. They pull this garbage so they don't have a shutdown. Come on, folks. If your main concern was a shutdown, then vote for a continuing resolution that you've been doing for the last 3 years. We have to continue it. This is worse. Worse. Not a lot worse, but it's worse. You should have maintained the sequester. Well, I'm out of time. I thank you for listening. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I do hope you've passed all your finals, the students out there, and got A's. And I think Friday was a makeup exam. I don't know if Saturday is, but for those that have exams on Saturday, keep on studying. You can get those A's. And I hope the show has been in both educational, informative, and maybe a little entertaining. And I hope it's waking you up, because you need to do your homework on this, especially the students. If you're looking for a job, you better be concerned about this, because you might find you'll be out of a job or have low-paid part-time jobs for the next 5 or 10 years until this is turned around. And it probably will take at least 5 to 10 years to do that. Sad to say, because I don't see much progress. I'm a realist. I'm not an optimist or pessimist, and that's why I say that. Until we get leadership, we have a leadership deficit in Congress, both in the House and the Senate. And until the Tea Party becomes a real party, call it the Independence Party, and throws these bums out. And they're bums, folks. We pay their salaries, their benefits, their retirement. And they retire, and many of them become lobbyists and make even more money. They really don't care about you and me. That's the majority. There's some good people up there. But we need more. We only have at most 50 or 60 in the House, maybe 20 or 30 at most. Take that back. We have maybe 10 to 15 in the Senate. Well, thank you for listening, and now back to the music.